Josh and Thomas and others have said. Thank you for being with us. And we're going to continue our series today from the story, the overarching story of Scriptures, looking at what God is doing in our lives. And I get the very exciting task of talking about the judges, a few good men and women. And if you have your sermon notes with you, I invite you to fill in a few blanks as we get started here. I want to read from our text today a few verses. That is in page 103 to 104 if you have a copy of the story with you. I'm going to read a little bit of that. Or if you have a copy of the Word with you and you want to read from Judges chapter 2, verses 6 through 16, if you want to read along with me, that'll be fine. But I want us to read that, and then we'll come back and fill in the blanks together and then make an application for us. God's Word is good, and it challenges us no matter what stage we're at in life, no matter what time this was written, what time in history it was, but it's amazing to see what God does, what we can learn. So let's begin with Judges chapter 2, verses 6 through 16. It says, "After Joshua had dismissed the Israelites, they went to take possession of the land, each to his own inheritance. The people served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua and of the elders who outlived him and who had seen all the great things the Lord had done for Israel. Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110, and they buried him in the land of his inheritance." I'll skip the locations there. "After that whole generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshipped various gods of the peoples around them. They provoked the Lord to anger because they forsook him and served Baal and the Ashtoreths. In his anger against Israel, the Lord handed them over to raiders who plundered them. He sold them to their enemies all around, whom they were no longer able to resist. Whenever Israel went out to fight, the hand of the Lord was against them to defeat them, just as he had sworn to them. They were in great distress." And then verse 16, "Then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hands of these raiders." We'll come back to some more in that chapter in a few minutes, but let's go on to the kind of an overview of what happens in Judges. Let's fill in our blanks together. Who in his generation died?
Joshua.
That is correct. Joshua and his generation died. Joshua, after he and had been handed the leadership of Israel, helped the kick the inhabitants of the land out. He and his generation were very victorious in many battles, defeating the local peoples. But after he and his generation died, what happened? A new generation grew up. Now, this generation was different because they did not know the Lord or what he had done. We're going to come back to that. Next, what did they begin to do? They began to worship other gods. They began to worship other gods, so God allowed their enemies to what? To raid and defeat them. So previously, when Joshua and his generation were there, they were having many victories. I believe Josh mentioned that last week. They would come in and they would, with God's hand, whether it was Jericho or other battles, they would take over these cities that they were promised in the promised land of Canaan. But now this next generation, this new generation comes along and they begin to worship other gods. They fall in love with the gods of Baal and Ashtoreth, the gods of the local peoples. So God allows their enemies to raid and defeat them. Then what happens? What does Israel do? They cry out to God. Israel cried out to God as these Philistines and Amorites and Canaanites and other groups began to come in, Midianites and others, they would cry out to God in their distress. God being a good God, what did he do? Go ahead to the next one there, I'm sorry. Did we skip one? No, we didn't. God sent and used imperfect leaders called judges to rescue them. Now, I don't know about you, but when I think of judge, I think of someone with a gown and a gavel, and he's presiding over. These were more like warriors. Now, they did often do settle disputes and things like that, but they were in the tradition of Moses. They were spiritual leaders, but they were also military leaders. But he sent and used imperfect leaders called judges to rescue them. Okay, now you got judges. I mean, that's amazing how you got that so quickly. That's basically what the book is about. Now, I want to mention there are a few famous judges that you'll know. I believe there were at least a dozen judges that are mentioned. Let's go ahead to the next one. Some well-known judges included a woman named Deborah. Good, you did your reading, or you remember. Deborah. A farmer. Gideon. Very good. And a strong man slash weak man. Samson. That's right. Well, this was a, we're probably more familiar with this part of Judges. The names, whether it's the stories we learned, perhaps if you grew up coming to church, grew up in a situation where maybe these stories were told, you may be more familiar with Samson the strong man or Gideon and the sword of the Lord and for Gideon and all of these wonderful stories. And you'll get a chance to discuss some of those today in your small group, and hopefully you've been able to dig into the Word this past week and re-familiarize yourself with those. But I want to focus on something else about judges that maybe gets overlooked, but I think is very important to us today. And if you'll continue in our reading, Judges chapter 2, verse 16, we're going to talk about going in circles. Because the thing about judges is this pattern that we first talked about, where the Israelites would fall away from God, God would allow them to be plundered, they would cry out to God would send a deliverer, happened over and over and over again. Let's read this. Starting with verse 16 again. Then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hands of these raiders. Yet they would not listen to their judges, but prostituted themselves to other gods and worshipped them. Unlike their fathers, they quickly turned from the way in which their fathers had walked, the way of obedience to the Lord's commands. Here's the cycle. Whenever the Lord raised up a judge for them, he was with the judge and saved them out of the hands of their enemies as long as the judge lived. For the Lord had compassion on them as they groaned under those who oppressed and afflicted them. But, verse 19, but when the judge died, the people returned to ways even more corrupt than those of their fathers, following other gods and serving and worshiping them. They refused to give up their evil practices and stubborn ways. Okay, I want to demonstrate this cycle for you kind of visually if I can. All right, remember in our story, the big story of God, God has selected this group of people to be a covenant people, to be in relationship with Him. And He has provided them with kind of the details of this relationship. You'll have no other gods before you. You'll make no images of other gods. And He's given them other purity types of commandments and the way they're to relate to each other. And if you do these things, I will be your God if you'll serve me and be faithful to me. Well, let's demonstrate it this way, okay? I know everybody all of a sudden started going, beach, I got to go to the beach. No. God provided in this covenant an element of protection, of blessing, of care over them. Wherever they were, God was there with them, protecting them. Remember, they lived in a fallen world. A world that was full of sin, full of things that happened going back from when Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden, the choice that they made. So whenever they were in covenant relationship with God and they followed Him and they were faithful to Him, God provided protection. But what happened? Let's review. What happened? They began to do what? Worship other gods. And so they would say, you know what? I'm going to kind of get out from under God's protection here. Well, this isn't so bad. And they would get out over here and they would kind of, experiment with things and God would be forgotten and laid down and moved away from. And they would say, you know what? I don't think we really need God. I mean, They kind of forgot about him, remember? And they decided to do their own thing. You're going to love this, or at least I think you are. They exchanged that protection for their own. I don't need that anymore because I have this. This incredible protection of my own. Don't take a picture. This is going to end. I should have thought about that. That's going to end up on something. But you get my point? They exchanged this right here. They exchanged this protection, the blessing of the covenant relationship with God, for their own strength. And really, this is probably overestimating what their own strength really was. That sound familiar? You know, I don't want that. I want this. I saw that. I want this because this is freedom. This is more me. This is what everybody's doing. Yeah. And so that's what they did. They exchanged it. Now what would happen next in this cycle? What would happen? Am I being protected very well right now under the covenant of God? No, he would allow what to happen? He would allow those people that previously he was protecting them from, he would allow them, okay, hey, if this is your choice, go ahead. Have at it. If that's what you, go ahead, I'm going to let you have it. And so they would become defeated. They would be raided, plundered. Read some of those stories in there. There were times when they couldn't even be in their fields because as soon as the crops got ready to be harvested, the Midianites or somebody would come in and get all the food and they would just swarm on them and be like, they'd run into the hills. Well, enough of that and you begin to cry out, okay, this is no good. This is no good. We realize there's something missing. And God would send who? A judge. He would send a military, a righteous person, again, an imperfect person, to remind them, look, guys, get back in relationship, in covenant with God. Let His protection be over us. God, there is no God like you. Man. Well, I don't know about you, but sometimes that seems like the story of my life. This cycle of, yes, God, well, maybe God, to no God, to oh, I need you, God, and then back again. And you get on this merry-go-round. I remember when I was a child, this will be the next slide. I remember the playground that I grew up on at our school. And believe me, I don't think they have things like this anymore because they're too dangerous. But boy, and probably was looking back on it, but they had that metal merry-go-round that had all the rails on it. Raise your hand if you've ever been on one of those. Uh-huh. You bunch of daredevils, you. All right, that was great, especially if you could get there early enough. You know, bolt out the door from recess, get to the merry-go-round as fast as you can, and then other people would be trying to get on. You wouldn't let them on. You wouldn't let them off. People are throwing up. It's wonderful. Okay, and you know, I remember that, and there were times when you were like, okay, I really want off of this merry-go-round, this carousel, whatever you call it. This metal wheel of death. I want off of this. And you're like, okay, I could jump. Well, if I jump, I'm going to knock out all of the third graders, you know, that are waiting to jump on. Or you know, I don't know. I'm just so dizzy. I don't feel good. And you want it off so bad. But you stayed on because, you know, you knew your friends were going to go, ha, 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 and they'd never let you back on again. Well, as I think about this cycle that the Israelites are on, as I think about this cycle that we get on, I think about this cycle that we get on as a church, as individuals, as a country. What do we do? How do we stop this thing? You know? How do we? I'm going to ask four questions today. And I want you to sincerely answer them for yourselves. The temptation is always to answer them for someone else. Well, you know so-and-so, they really, or you know our country, that's what's wrong with. I want you to forget about that today for a few minutes. I want you to ask yourself these four questions. Nobody else. And I don't want you filling in the answer for somebody else. I want you to answer these four questions. How do I get off this thing? How do we stop this cycle? Well, I think there are four clues in our scriptures. Again, chapter 2, verse 6, it says, after Joshua had dismissed the Israelites, they went to take possession of the land, each to his own inheritance. Well, that's what they were supposed to do, right? You come in, you clear out the inhabitants of the land. They didn't get all of them, by the way. Clear out the inhabitants of the land and take possession, just as God had promised. It seems to me, throughout some of these stories and just kind of thinking about it, that maybe the Israelites at this time, this generation of Israelites, got distracted and they began to focus on settling in. You know, there's a natural tendency in all of us when we move, when we change jobs, when we adjust to a new animal in our house, when we adjust to a new child in our house, when we, you know, we want things to get in a routine. We want things to get settled. It's hard things being in limbo all the time. And so I'm sure after centuries of wandering and not having their own land, they finally get their own land. And they settle in. And they settle in. And they become complacent. And the work becomes less about defending and maybe following God's instructions and more about, hey, you know that land over there? I like that land. That's a good spot. I think I'm going to put my house there. And I'm going to spend a lot of time building my house and clearing acreage and you know, having a farm and doing all the things that we need to survive. And we're going to start settling and claiming, which was part of God's plan, but I don't think He ever meant for them to become complacent and satisfied with that. I think that began to have an effect on the mentality of the Israelites. Because our second point, as they become settling into their own inheritance, well, let me back up. Here's the question that goes with that. It's easy to become busy, isn't it? It's easy to become busy. And so the question that goes with that is, am I too busy doing less important things? Now, notice I didn't say the least important things, but I just said less important things. Just ask yourself right now, the things that you're spending your time doing, the things that occupy most of your time, how many of them maybe aren't on your most important list? The things that you would do. Well, if you recall, this next generation grew up, and what was their description? A generation grew up that did not know God, nor did they know the things that He had done. My question is, why? Why did they not know? Well, possible answers. Were they not told? Did they not listen? Did the stories that they heard, were they not real anymore in the mouths of those that told them? Were they not relevant? You know, if you look in chapter 2, verse 10, that description is there. After that whole generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what He had done for Israel. You know, it's easy to live vicariously through someone else's experiences of God. I say easy. It's easier to do that, to know about God, than it is to know God. I think that's exactly what's going on here. I think the generation that settled in, maybe either for whatever reason there was a disconnect. Maybe they didn't tell this younger generation. Maybe the younger generation, that was not their experience. They didn't need God as much in their line of thinking. But whatever it was, when they grew up, they didn't know God. And so they had a secondhand faith. A secondhand faith will not help you. A secondhand faith is when you know of God through someone else and that's it. And you, for example, when you go to church and you think being in a church building will be enough to help me know God, or talking about prayer in a class and taking notes and reading up on prayer and studying on prayer, but not ever praying, or talking about faith. Boy, they sure had a lot of faith back in the Old Testament. You know, the things that Moses did and the things that Elijah did. Where's our faith today to step out and do something? To step out and risk something and we can talk about faith and I can read the stories and we can model the stories as far as we can act it out and do it with puppets or we can come up with a great sermon. But where is our faith? Where is your faith for tomorrow morning when you get up? Saying something to somebody that you know ought to be said, but you're, that's going to be tough. Yes, it is. That's faith. Take a step. Where is that, you know what? I'm going to give till it hurts. I'm not going to give out of my abundance, out of my leftovers, out of my extra. I'm going to give till it hurts. You know what? I do not have time for this. You know, they keep asking me to teach at church. Hint, hint. They keep doing all kinds of things, but, you know, it just doesn't fit my schedule. Are we giving till it hurts? Are we just kind of, I'm a church-going person. My mom is a church-going person. My dad. You know, secondhand faith. I think we need to ask ourselves, am I living a secondhand faith? That's the second question. Am I living a secondhand faith? That generation grew up who didn't know God or what He had done. I alluded to this third one a minute ago. God became very frustrated with them because when they went in to take over the land, they were instructed to remove all of the people. You know, sometimes we get a little bogged down in that. You know, why did God have those innocent people removed? Well, they weren't innocent. They were worshiping other gods. And it was their time. The time of the Amorites was full. Google that, okay? But the time of the Amorites was full. It was their time to be removed. And, you know, it seems to me that when you leave something kind of undone, when you leave God's instructions kind of done part way, when you leave it done 99%, 98%, there's still 2% you weren't faithful in. There was a reason He told you to do that. There was a reason that He said, get them all out of there. Okay? Well, what happened was this next generation, they intermarried. They intermarried with the local people. Well, what happens when you intermarry? Well, okay, let's just take it real here, okay? What happened when you and your spouse first celebrated Christmas together? You did celebrate Christmas, right? Okay. Well, you probably took some... Well, you probably had an argument, but you also probably had... We did not, right? Okay. Yes, I don't remember. Okay. I'm sure I did. I'm sure. But you adapt some traditions, some schedules, some things from one family, and you adapt some traditions, some history, some schedules, some routines, some fun things from another. And you what? You blend them together. Okay, that's kind of a nice, sweet thing. It can be a little rough at times, right? But it becomes its own thing. What happens when an Israelite man, a God-fearing man who grows up maybe without much of a foundation, but he grows up believing in one God and practicing the Ten Commandments and going to learning the Old Testament and being a part of everything that's going on, learning the law, marries a Canaanite woman. Their houses blend. They blend. And what you end up having is a mixture of things that it's kind of this patchwork quilt of beliefs that are passed down, that are shared, that are... And can you imagine being a child in that situation and going, huh, Dad says there's one God, Mom says this is God. Maybe there isn't a God, and maybe everybody's a God. And that sound familiar? So you have intermarriage, and you have a blending of things, and many of the Israelites decided, you know what? Worshiping God is hard. He asks us to do stuff. But you know, if I go worship that idol, well, it's more fun. I don't really have to do anything it says because it doesn't say anything. But I enjoy that because it's festive, and you end up with people who are once faithful to God who are slowly pulled away to worship the Baals and the Ashtaroths, the local gods. Well, I think the question that goes along with that, again, the first question is, am I too busy settling in my own land, doing the less important things? The second thing was, do I have a second-hand faith, no faith of my own? This third question is, do I have areas of compromise in my life? Oh, David, why did you ask that? Do I have areas of compromise? Well, I can't help it. I just like that kind of music. You know, it doesn't really say things that are too bad. Or, you know, everybody else wears that. That's kind of the style now. I mean, I know the styles, right? language today is more about expression. I can say whatever I want. I can email whatever I want. I know everybody's toes are getting sore now because mine are. But we find little areas of compromise where we quit trying to be what God's called us to be, and we just kind of get sucked in. We don't realize that it weakens and dilutes what it is that God calls us to be. Now, it may be different for each one of us, but I challenge you. This week, today, think about it. Are there areas of compromise in my life? The last question that I want you to ask yourself is, who sets the standards I live by? And all of these are interrelated. But who sets the standards I live by? You know, there's a very ominous verse that occurs at the end of Judges. I don't believe it is in the story particularly. But it's actually repeated twice. It's in Judges chapter 21, verse 25. It's the very last verse. Again, we're leading up into the days of where Israel will have kings. But right now, there are all these pockets of people, and it's just chaotic somewhat. But this verse is also in chapter 17, verse 6. But it aptly describes the situation there that was going on. In those days, Israel had no king. All right, listen to this next phrase. Everyone did as he saw fit. Everyone did as he saw fit. Well, you know, if you want to do that, that's okay. Well, if you want to do that, that's okay. It's okay. I'm not going to tell you what to do. As long as you don't tell me what to do. I don't want to offend them. Everyone just did what they wanted to do. Everyone was their own standard for what's right and what's wrong. Everyone was, and if you read the rest of the book of Judges, I encourage you to read some of the chapters not included in the story. The situation in Israel deteriorates rapidly. In fact, if you go through the Judges, it seems like Samson, the last judge prior to Samuel, he was a mess. He was a mess. Half the time, I'm not sure which side he's on. You know, I think I'll marry a Philistine. Was it? What? Anyway, I just get confused. Who is your standard? Is our standard what makes us feel good? Is it what makes us happy? Is it what everyone else is doing? Does that make it okay? Or is it what God tells us to do? Is it what's in the Scriptures? Is it what's in the Word? Or is it just kind of, yeah, that's okay for you, but not okay for me? I challenge us all today to say, look, I've got to live by God's standards, not my own. Are there areas in my life where I'm letting somebody else or something else set the standard for my life? Well, it's not as bad as what they're doing, so I must be okay. Everyone did as they saw fit. So who sets the standards that you live by? Well, Judges is a challenging book. This is a challenging section of God's story, the grand story of Him delivering and rescuing us. And I want to make one more point as we get ready to wrap up. You know, I struggle with the imperfect nature of the men and women that God uses sometimes. You know, the title of this lesson, A Few Good Men and Women, God would send a judge to rescue, to deliver. You know, if you look at Gideon, he was a doubter. And that gives me courage in one sense that, you know what, God can use me too as a doubter. You look at Samson, well, God can use somebody like Samson who's obviously got moral dilemmas that he can't seem to overcome. But as I look at those stories and I think about those, I think there's another little nugget in there that really ought to give us hope in a different way. You know, all of those imperfect people that God used, they call and foreshadow something else. That there is someone needed who is perfect. We need a perfect deliverer. All of these guys provide some sort of guys and gals provide some sort of temporary help. And then again on the cycle again, but that doesn't seem to be the answer, does it? It doesn't seem to be the answer. The answer must lie in something else, in someone else. It must lie in a perfect deliverer, Jesus Christ. The promised one. The one this whole story is leading up to and been about. God's rescue plan for us. That gives me hope. When I'm on that merry-go-round, when I'm on that cycle, when things are going crazy and I can't tell what's up, what's down, what's left, what's right, and the questions are great, but I still need help. It gives me hope that God knew our deepest need was ultimately a deliverer, a perfect deliverer. I'm going to ask four of our elders to come forward as we wrap up and begin our prayer time together. Wayne Holt, Todd Bess, if you're here, Kent and Stephen Bridges. This is a time that we have set aside for prayer. As you've answered those four questions, perhaps you've got something that, you know, is just bugging you a little bit. And maybe you're thinking, I don't know if I can ask for help for that. Yes, you can. That's why we're all here. We all acknowledge we need that deliverer. It may be that you've decided, you know, hey, now is the time. I know all that, David. I need someone to deliver me. I need to know Jesus Christ better. Whatever your need is, pray where you are or come forward and pray with one of these gentlemen, these shepherds over our souls. But let's do that as we stand and as we sing.
I need you more than yesterday. I need you more. Give me everything.
God, thank you so much for everything that you've done for us, God. We do need you more every day. Lord, let us learn lessons from what we've read in Judges today and stories that are in your word. Let us learn what not to do and how to love you and how to rely on you for everything, God. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. You are dismissed. Yeah.